Obi-Wan's frown deepened. No, I don't. The Force grows ever darker around us, and we are all affected by it, even as we affect it. This is a dangerous time to be a Jedi. Please, Anakin, please be careful. Anakin tried for his old rakish smile. You worry too much. I have to, because I don't worry at all, right? Anakin finished for him. Obi-Wan's frown softened toward a smile. How did you know I was going to say that? You're wrong, you know. Anakin stared off through the morning haze toward the shuttle, past the shuttle, toward 500 Republica and Padme's apartment. He said, I worry plenty. The ride to Palpatine's office was quietly tense. Anakin had tried making conversation with the two tall, helmet-masked figures in the red robes, but they weren't exactly chatty. Anakin's discomfort only increased when he arrived at Palpatine's office. He had been here so often that he didn't even really see it most times. The deep red runner that matched the softly curving walls, the long, comfortable couches, the huge arc of window behind Palpatine's desk, these were all so familiar that they were usually almost invisible. But today, with Obi-Wan's voice whispering, be wary of Palpatine in the back of his head, everything looked different. New, and not in a good way. Some indefinable gloom shrouded everything, as though the orbital mirrors that focused the light of Coruscant's distant sun into bright daylight had somehow been damaged or smudged with the brown haze of smoke that still shrouded the cityscape. The light of the Chancellor's lamp disc seemed brighter than usual, almost harsh. But somehow, that only deepened the gloom. He discovered now an odd accidental echo of memory, a new harmonic resonance inside his head when he looked at the curving view wall that threw into silhouette the Chancellor's single large chair. Palpatine's office reminded him of the General's quarters on Invisible Hand, and it struck him as unaccountably sinister that the robes worn by the Chancellor's cadre of bodyguards were the exact color of Palpatine's carpet. Palpatine himself stood at the view wall, hands clasped behind him, gazing out upon the smoke-hazed morning. Anakin. He must have seen Anakin's reflection in the curve of transparasteel. He had not moved. Join me. Anakin came up beside him, mirroring his stance. Endless cityscapes stretched away before them. Here and there, the remains of shattered buildings still smoldered. Space lane traffic was beginning to return to normal, and rivers of gnat-like speeders and air taxis and repulsor buses crisscrossed the city. In the near distance, the vast dome of the Galactic Senate squatted like a gigantic gray mushroom sprung from the Duracrete plain that was Republic Plaza. Farther, dim in the brown haze, he could pick out the quintuple spires that topped the ziggurat of the Jedi Temple. Do you see, Anakin? Palpatine's voice was soft, hoarse with emotion. Do you see what they have done to our magnificent city? This war must end. We cannot allow such... His voice trailed away, and he shook his head. Gently, Anakin laid a hand on Palpatine's shoulder, and a hint of frown fleeted over his face at how frail seemed the flesh and bone beneath the robe. You know you have my best efforts, and those of every Jedi, he said. Palpatine nodded, lowering his head. I know I have yours, Anakin. The rest of the Jedi... He sighed. He looked even more exhausted than he had yesterday. Perhaps he had passed a sleepless night as well. I have asked you here, he said slowly, because I need your help on a matter of extreme delicacy. I hope I can depend upon your discretion, Anakin. Anakin went still for a moment. Then he very slowly lifted his hand from the Chancellor's shoulder. Be wary of Palpatine. As a Jedi, there are limits to my discretion, Chancellor. Oh, of course. Don't worry, my boy. A flash of his familiar fatherly smile forced its way into his eyes. Anakin, in all the years we have been friends, have I ever asked you to do anything even the slightest bit against your conscience?
Well,
and I never will. I am very proud of your accomplishments as a Jedi, Anakin. You have won many battles the Jedi Council insisted to me were already lost, and you saved my life. It's frankly appalling that they still keep you off the Council yourself.
My time will come, when I'm older, and, I suppose, wiser.
He didn't want to get into this with Palpatine. Talking with a Chancellor like this, seriously, man to man, made him feel good, feel strong, despite Obi-Wan's warning. He certainly didn't want to start whining about being passed over for mastery like some pre-adolescent Padawan who hadn't been chosen for a scramball team. Nonsense. Age is no measure of wisdom. They keep you off the Council because it is the last hold they have on you, Anakin. It is how they control you. Once you're a master, as you deserve, how will they make you do their bidding?
Well, Anakin gave him a half-sheepish smile. They can't exactly make me, even now.
I know, my boy. I know. That is precisely the point. You are not like them. You are younger, stronger, better. If they cannot control you now, what will happen once you are a master in your own right? How will they keep your toes on their political line? You may become more powerful than all of them together. That is why they keep you down. They fear your power. They fear you.
Anakin looked down. This had struck a little close to the bone. I have sensed something like that.
I have asked you here today, Anakin, because I have fears of my own. He turned, waiting until Anakin met his eye, and on Palpatine's face was something approaching bleak despair. I am coming to fear the Jedi themselves.
Oh, Chancellor! Anakin broke into a smile of disbelief. There is no one more loyal than the Jedi, sir. Surely after all this time. But Palpatine had already turned away.
He lowered himself into the chair behind his desk and kept his head down as though he was ashamed to say this directly to Anakin's face. The Council keeps pushing for more control, more autonomy. They have lost all respect for the rule of law. They have become more concerned with avoiding the oversight of the Senate than with winning the war.
With respect, sir, many on the Council would say the same of you. He thought of Obi-Wan, and he had to stop himself from wincing. Had he betrayed a confidence just now? Or had Obi-Wan been doing the Council's bidding after all?
Be wary of Palpatine, he'd said, and be careful of your feelings. Were these honest warnings out of concern for him? Or had they been calculated, seeds of doubt planted to hedge Anakin away from the one man who really understood him? The one man he could really trust.
Oh, I have no doubt of it, Palpatine was saying.
Many of the Jedi on your council would prefer I was out of office altogether, because they know I'm onto them now. They're shrouded in secrecy, obsessed with covert action against mysteriously faceless enemies.
Well, the Sith are hardly faceless, are they? I mean, Dooku himself.
Was he truly a Lord of the Sith? Or was he just another in your string of fallen Jedi, posturing with a red lightsaber to intimidate you?
Anakin frowned. How could he be sure?
But Sidious? Ah, yes, the mysterious Lord Sidious. The Sith infiltrator in the highest levels of government. Doesn't that sound a little overly familiar to you, Anakin? A little overly convenient? How do you know this Sidious even exists? How do you know he is not a fiction? A fiction created by the Jedi Council to give them an excuse to harass their political enemies.
The Jedi are not political.
In a democracy, everything is political, Anakin. And everyone. This imaginary Sith Lord of theirs, even if he does exist, is he anyone to be feared? To be hunted down and exterminated without trial?
The Sith are the definition of evil. or so you have been trained to believe. I have been reading about the history of the Sith for some years now, Anakin. Ever since the Council saw fit to finally reveal to me their assertion that these millennium-dead sorcerers had supposedly sprung back to life. Not every tale about them is sequestered in your conveniently secret temple archives. From what I have read, they were not so different from Jedi. Seeking power, to be sure, but so does your council. The dark side. Oh, yes, yes, certainly the dark side. Listen to me. If this Darth Sidious of yours were to walk through that door right now, and I could somehow stop you from killing him on the spot, do you know what I would do? Palpatine rose, and his voice rose with him. I would ask him to sit down, and I would ask him if he has any power he could use to end this war.
You would? You would?
Anakin couldn't quite make himself believe what he was hearing. The blood-red rug beneath his feet seemed to shift under him, and his head was starting to spin. And if he said he did, I'd bloody well offer him a brandy and talk it out.
You...
Chancellor, you can't be serious. Well, not entirely. Palpatine sighed and shrugged and lowered himself once more into his chair. It's only an example, Anakin. I would do anything to return peace to the galaxy, do you understand? That's all I mean. After all... He offered a tired, sadly ironic smile. What are the chances of an actual Sith Lord ever walking through that door?
I wouldn't know, Anakin said feelingly. But I do know that you probably shouldn't use that example in front of the Jedi Council.
Oh, yes, Palpatine chuckled. Yes, quite right. They might take it as an excuse to accuse me. I'm sure they'd never do that. I am not. I am no longer sure they'll stop at anything, Anakin. That's actually the reason I asked you here today.
He leaned forward intently, resting his elbows on the desk.
You may have heard that this afternoon, the Senate will call upon this office to assume direct control of the Jedi Council.
Anakin's frown deepened. The Jedi will no longer report to the Senate?
They will report to me, personally. The Senate is too unfocused to conduct this war. We've seen this for years. Now that this office will be the single authority to direct the prosecution of the war, we'll bring a quick end to things.
Anakin nodded. I can see how that will help, sir, but the Council probably won't. I can tell you that they are in no mood for further constitutional amendments.
Yes, thank you, my friend, but in this case, I have no choice. This war must be won.
Everyone agrees on that.
I hope they do, my boy. I hope they do.
Inside his head, he heard the echo of Obi-Wan murmuring, "Relations between the Council and the Chancellor are stressed." What had been going on here in the capital? Weren't they all on the same side?
I can assure you, he said firmly, that the Jedi are absolutely dedicated to the core values of the Republic.
One of Palpatine's eyebrows arched.
Their actions will speak more loudly than their words, as long as someone keeps an eye on them. And that, my boy, is exactly the favor I must ask of you.
I don't understand.
Anakin, I am asking you, as a personal favor to me, in respect for our long friendship, to accept a post as my personal representative on the Jedi Council.
Anakin blinked. He blinked again. He said,
"Me?
Who else?"
Palpatine spread his hands in a melancholy shrug. "You are the only Jedi I know, truly know, that I can trust. I need you, my boy. There is no one else who can do this job. To be the eyes and ears and the voice of the Republic on the Jedi Council."
"On the Council," Anakin murmured. He could see himself seated in one of the low curving chairs opposite Mace Windu, opposite Yoda. He might sit next to Ki-Adi-Mundi or Plo Koon, or even beside Obi-Wan.
and he could not quite ignore the quiet whisper from down within the furnace doors that sealed his heart that he was about to become the youngest master in the 25,000-year history of the Jedi Order. But none of that really mattered. Palpatine had somehow seen into his secret heart and had chosen to offer him the one thing he most desired in all the galaxy. He didn't care about the Council, not really. That was a childish dream. He didn't need the Council. He didn't need recognition, and he didn't need respect. What he needed was the rank itself. All that mattered was mastery. All that mattered was Padme. This was a gift beyond gifts. As a master, he could access those forbidden holocrons in the restricted vault. He could find a way to save her from his dream. He shook himself back to the present. I am overwhelmed, sir. But the Council elects its own members. They will never accept this. I promise you they will, Palpatine murmured imperturbably. He swung his chair around to gaze out the window toward the distant spires of the temple. They need you more than they realize. All it will take is for someone to properly... He waved a hand expressively. Explain it to them. Chapter 11. Politics. Orbital mirrors rotated, resolving the faint light of Coruscant's sun to erase the stars. Fireships crosshatched the sky with contrails of chemical air scrubber, bleaching away the last reminders of the fires of days past. Chill remnants of night slid down the High Council Tower of the Jedi Temple, and within the cloistered chamber itself, Obi-Wan was still trying to talk them out of it. Yes, of course I trust him, he said patiently. We can always trust Anakin to do what he thinks is right, but we can't trust him to do what he's told. He can't be made to simply obey. Believe me, I've been trying for many years. Conflicting currents of energy swirled and clashed in the council chamber. Traditionally, decisions of the council were reached by quiet, mutual contemplation of the flow of the force, until all the council was of a single mind on the matter. But Obi-Wan knew of this tradition only by reputation, from tales in the archives and stories told by masters whose tenure on the council predated the return of the Sith. In the all-too-short years since Obi-Wan's own elevation, argument in this chamber was more the rule than the exception.
An unintentional opportunity the Chancellor has given us,
Yoda said gravely.
A window he has opened into the operations of his office. Fools we would be to close our eyes.
Then we should use someone else's eyes, Obi-Wan said. Forgive me, Master Yoda, but you just don't know him the way I do. None of you does. He is fiercely loyal, and there is not a gram of deception in him. You've all seen it. It's one of the arguments that some of you, here in this room, have used against elevating him to Master. He lacks true Jedi reserve, that's what you've said. And by that we all mean that he wears his emotions like a hollow net banner. How can you ask him to lie to a friend, to spy upon him?
That is why we must call upon a friend to ask him,
said Agent Kolar in his gentle Zabrak baritone. You don't understand. Don't make him choose between me and Palpatine.
Why not?
Asked the hollow presence of Plo Koon from the Bridge of Courageous, where he directed the Republic Navy Strike Force against the Separatist choke point in the Uwalander system.
Do you fear you would lose such a contest?
You don't know how much Palpatine's friendship has meant to him over the years. You're asking him to use that friendship as a weapon, to stab his friend in the back. Don't you understand what this will cost him, even if Palpatine is entirely innocent? Especially if he's innocent. Their relationship will never be the same.
And that, Mace Windu said, may be the best argument in favor of this plan. I have told you all what I have seen of the energy between Skywalker and the Supreme Chancellor. Anything that might distance young Skywalker from Palpatine's influence is worth the attempt.
Obi-Wan didn't need to reach into the Force to know that he would lose this argument. He inclined his head. I will, of course, abide by the ruling of this council.
doubt of that. None of us has.
Yoda turned his green gaze on the other counselors.
But if to be done this is, decide we must how best to use him.
The hollow presence of Ki-Adi Mundi flickered in and out of focus as the Saurian master leaned forward, folding his hands.
I too have reservations on this matter, but it seems that in these desperate times, only desperate plans have hope of success. We have seen that young Skywalker has the power to battle a Sith Lord alone, if need be. He has proven that with Dooku. If he is indeed the Chosen One, we must keep him in play against the Sith. Keep him in a position to fulfill his destiny.
And even if the prophecy has been misread, Agent Kolar added, Anakin is the one Jedi we can best hope would survive an encounter with the Sith Lord. So let us also use him to help us set our trap. In Council, let us emphasize that we are intensifying our search for Grievous. Anakin will certainly report this to the Chancellor's office. Perhaps, as you say, that will draw Sidious into action.
It may not be enough, Mace Windu said. Let us take this one step farther. We should appear short-handed and weak, giving Sidious an opening to make a move he thinks will go unobserved. I'm thinking that perhaps we should let the Chancellor's office know that Yoda and I have both been forced to take the field.
Too risky, that is,
Yoda said.
And too convenient. One of us only should go.
Then it should be you, Master Yoda, Agent Kolar said. It is your sensitivity to the broader currents of the Force that a Sith Lord has most reason to fear.
Obi-Wan felt the ripple of agreement flow through the chamber, and Yoda nodded solemnly.
The Separatist attack on Kashyyyk, a compelling excuse we'll make. And good relations with the Wookiees I have. Destroy the droid armies I can, and still be available to Coruscant, should Sidious take our bait.
Agreed.
Mace Windu looked around the half-empty council chamber with a deepening frown.
And one last touch. Let's let the Chancellor know, through Anakin, that our most cunning and insightful master, and our most tenacious, is to lead the hunt for Grievous.
So Sidious will need to act, and act fast, if the war is to be maintained,
Plo Koon added approvingly. Yoda nodded judiciously.
Agreed.
Agent Kolar assented as well, and Ki-Adi Mundi. This sounds like a good plan, Obi-Wan said. But what master do you have in mind? For a moment, no one spoke. As though astonished, he would ask such a question. Only after a few seconds in which Obi-Wan looked from the faces of one master to the next, puzzled by the expressions of gentle amusement each and every one of them wore, did it finally register that all of them were looking at him. Bail Organa stopped cold in the middle of the grand concourse that ringed the Senate's convocation chamber. The torrent of multi-species foot traffic that streamed along the huge curving hall broke around him like a river around a boulder. He stared up in disbelief at one of the huge holo-projected proclamation boards. These had recently been installed above the concourse to keep the thousands of senators up to the moment on news of the war and on the Chancellor's latest executive orders. His heart tripped, and he couldn't seem to make his eyes focus. He pushed his way through the press to a hard copy stand and punched a quick code. When he had the flimsies in his hand, they still said the same thing. He'd been expecting this day. Since yesterday, when the Senate had voted to give Palpatine control of the Jedi, he'd known it would come soon. He'd even started planning for it. But that didn't make it any easier to bear. He found his way to a public comm booth and keyed a privacy code. The transparisteel booth went opaque as stone, and a moment later, a hand-sized image shimmered into existence above the small hollow disk. A slender woman in floor-length white, with short, neatly clipped auburn hair and a clear, steadily intelligent gaze from her aquamarine eyes.
Bail, what's happened?
Bail's elegantly thin goatee pulled downward around his mouth.
Have you seen this morning's decree?
The sector governance decree? Yes, I have.
It's time, Mon, he said grimly. It's time to stop talking and start doing. We have to bring in the Senate.
I agree, but we must tread carefully. Have you thought about whom we should consult? Whom we can trust?
Not in detail. Gideon Danu springs to mind. I'm sure we can trust Fang Zhar, too.
Agreed. What about Iridic Stalu? Her hearts are in the right place. Or Chi Igwe?
Bale shook his head. Maybe later. It'll take a few hours at least to figure out exactly where they stand. We need to start with senators we know we can trust.
All right. Then Ter Tanil would be my next choice. And I think Amidala of Naboo.
Padme? Bale frowned. I'm not sure.
You know her better than I do, Bale. But to my mind, she's exactly the type of senator we need. She's intelligent, principled, extremely articulate, and she has the heart of a warrior.
She is also a longtime associate of Palpatine, he reminded her. He was her ambassador during her term as Queen of Naboo. How sure can you be that she will stand with us, and not with him? Senator Mon Mothma replied serenely.
There's only one way to find out.
By the time the doors to the Jedi Council chamber finally swung open, Anakin was already angry. If asked, he would have denied it, and would have thought he was telling the truth. But they had left him out here for so long, with nothing to do but stare through the soot-smudged curve of the High Council Tower's window ring at the scarred skyline of Galactic City. Damaged in a battle he had won, by the way, personally, almost single-handedly, and with nothing to think about except why it was taking them so long to reach such a simple decision. Angry? Not at all. He was sure he wasn't angry. He kept telling himself he wasn't angry, and he made himself believe it. Anakin walked into the council chamber, head lowered in a show of humility and respect. But down inside him, down around the nuclear shielding that banked his heart, he was hiding. It wasn't anger he was hiding. His anger was only camouflage. Behind his anger hid the dragon. He remembered too well the first time he had entered this chamber, the first time he had stood within a ring of Jedi Masters gathered to sit in judgment upon his fate. He remembered how Yoda's green stare had seen into his heart, had seen the cold worm of dread eating away at him, no matter how hard he'd tried to deny it, the awful fear he'd felt that he might never see his mother again. He couldn't let them see what that worm had grown into. He moved slowly into the center of the circle of brown-toned carpet and turned toward the senior members. Yoda was unreadable as always, his rumpled features composed in a mask of serene contemplation. Mace Windu could have been carved from stone. Ghost images of Ki-Adi-Mundi and Plo Koon hovered a centimeter above their council seats, maintained by the seat's internal holoprojectors. Agent Kolar sat alone between the empty chairs belonging to Shakti and Stassi Lee. Obi-Wan sat in the chair that once had belonged to Oppo Rancissus, looking pensive, even worried.
Anakin Skywalker.
Master Windu's tone was so severe that the dragon inside Anakin coiled instinctively.
The Council has decided to comply with Chancellor Palpatine's directive, and with the instructions of the Senate that give him the unprecedented authority to command this council. You are hereby granted a seat at the High Council of the Jedi, as the Chancellor's personal representative.
Anakin stood very still for a long moment, until he could be absolutely sure he had heard what he thought he'd heard. Palpatine had been right. He seemed to be right about a lot of things these days. In fact, now that Anakin came to think of it, he couldn't remember a single instance when the Supreme Chancellor had been wrong. Finally, as it began to sink in upon him, as he gradually allowed himself to understand that the Council had finally decided to grant him his heart's desire, that they finally had recognized his accomplishments, his dedication, his power, he took a slow, deep breath. Thank you, Masters. You have my pledge that I will uphold the highest principles of the Jedi Order.
Allow this appointment lightly. The Council does not.
Yoda's ears curled forward at Anakin like accusing fingers.
Disturbing is this move by Chancellor Palpatine on many levels.
They have become more concerned with avoiding the oversight of the Senate than they are with winning the war.
Anakin inclined his head. I understand.
I'm not sure you do. Mace Windu leaned forward, staring into Anakin's eyes with a measuring squint.
Anakin was barely paying attention. In his mind, he was already leaving the council chamber, riding the turbo lift to the archives, demanding access to the restricted vault by authority of his new rank.
You will attend the meetings of this council, the Corrin Master said, but you will not be granted the rank and privileges of a Jedi Master.
What? It was a small word, a simple word, an instinctive recoil from words that felt like punches, like stun blasts exploding inside his brain that left his head ringing and the room spinning around him. But even to his own ears, the voice that came from his lips didn't sound like his own. It was deeper, darker, clipped and oiled, resonating from the depths of his heart. It didn't sound like him at all, and it smoked with fury.
How dare you? How dare you?
Anakin stood welded to the floor, motionless. He wasn't even truly aware of speaking. It was as if someone else were using his mouth, and now, finally, he recognized the voice.
It sounded like Dooku, but it was not Dooku's voice. It was the voice of Dooku's destroyer.
No Jedi in this room can match my power. No Jedi in the galaxy.
You think you can deny mastery to me?
The Chancellor's representative you are,
Yoda said.
And it is as his representative you shall attend the council. Sit in this chamber you will, but no vote will you have. The Chancellor's views you shall present, his wishes, his ideas and directives, not your own.
Up from the depths of his furnace heart came an answer so far transcending fury that it sounded cold as interstellar space.
This is an insult to me and to the Chancellor. Do not imagine that it will be tolerated.
Mace Windu's eyes were as cold as the voice from Anakin's mouth.
Take your seat, young Skywalker.
Anakin matched his stare.
Perhaps I'll take yours.
His own voice, inside his head, had a hot black fire that smoked from the depths of his furnace heart.
You think you can stop me from saving my love? You think you can make me watch her die? Go ahead and vapod this, you.
Anakin, Obi-Wan said softly. He gestured to an empty seat beside him. Please. And something in Obi-Wan's gentle voice, in his simple, straightforward request, sent his anger slinking off, ashamed, and Anakin found himself alone on the carpet in the middle of the Jedi Council, blinking. He suddenly felt very young and very foolish.
Forgive me, Masters.
His bow of contrition couldn't hide the blaze of embarrassment that climbed his cheeks. The rest of the session passed in a haze. Ki-Adi Mundi said something about no Republic world reporting any sign of Grievous, and Anakin felt a dull shock when the Council assigned the task of coordinating the search to Obi-Wan alone. On top of everything else, now, they were splitting up the team? He was so numbly astonished by it all that he barely registered what they were saying about a droid landing on Kashyyyk. But he had to say something. He couldn't just sit here for his whole first meeting of the Council, master or not. And he knew the Kashyyyk system almost as well as he knew the back alleys of Mos Espa. I can handle it, he offered, suddenly brightening. I could clear that planet in a day or two.
Skywalker, your assignment is here.
Mace Windu's stare was hard as Durasteel and only a scrape short of openly hostile.
Then Yoda volunteered, and for some reason, the council didn't even bother to vote.
It is settled then, Mace said. May the Force be with us all.
And as the hollow presences of Plo Koon and Ki-Adi Mundi winked out, as Obi-Wan and Agent Kolar rose and spoke together in tones softly grave, as Yoda and Mace Windu walked from the room, Anakin could only sit, sick at heart, stunned with helplessness.
Padme. Oh, Padme. What are we going to do?
He didn't know. He didn't have a clue. But he knew one thing he wasn't going to do. He wasn't going to give up. Even with the council against him, even with the whole order against him, he would find a way. He would save her. Somehow.
I am no happier than the rest of you about this, Padme said, gesturing at the flimsoplast of the Sector Governance Decree on Bail Organa's desk. But I've known Palpatine for years. He was my most trusted advisor. I'm not prepared to believe his intent is to dismantle the Senate.
Why should he bother? Mon Mothma countered. As a practical matter, as of this morning, the Senate no longer exists.
Padme looked from one grim face to another. Gideon Danu nodded his agreement. Ter Tanil kept her eyes down, pretending to be adjusting her robes. Fang Zar ran a hand over his unruly gray-streaked topknot. Bail leaned forward. His eyes were hard as chips of stone.
Palpatine no longer has to worry about controlling the Senate. By placing his lackeys as governors over every planet in the Republic, he controls our systems directly.
He folded his hands and squeezed them together until his knuckles hurt.
He's become a dictator. We made him a dictator.
And he's my husband's friend and mentor, Padme thought. I shouldn't even be listening to this.
But what can we do about it? Ter Tanil asked, still gazing down at her robe with a worried frown.
That's what we asked you here to discuss, Mon Mothma told her calmly. What we're going to do about it.
Fang Zar shifted uncomfortably.
I'm not sure I like where this is going.
None of us likes where anything is going, Bail said, half rising.
That's exactly the point.
We can't let 1,000 years of democracy disappear without a fight.
A fight? Padme said. I can't believe what I'm hearing. Bail, you sound like a separatist.
Bail sank back into his seat. I apologize. That was not my intent. I asked you all here because of all the senators in the galaxy, you four have been the most consistent and influential voices of reason and restraint, doing all you could to preserve our poor, tattered constitution. We don't want to hurt the Republic.
With your help, we hope to save it.
It has become increasingly clear, Mon Mothma said, that Palpatine has become an enemy of democracy. He must be stopped.
The Senate gave him these powers, Padme said. The Senate can rein him in.
Gideon Danu sat forward.
I fear you underestimate just how deeply the Senate's corruption has taken hold.
Who will vote against Palpatine now?
I will, Padme said. She discovered that she meant it.
And I'll find others, too.
She'd have to, no matter how much it hurt Anakin.
Oh, my love. Will you ever find a way to forgive me?
You do that, Bail said. Make as much noise as you can. Keep Palpatine watching what you're doing in the Senate. That should provide some cover while Mon Mothma and I begin building our organization.
Stop, Padme rose. It's better to leave some things unsaid. Right now, it's better I don't know anything about anything.
Don't make me lie to my husband, was her unspoken plea. She tried to convey it with her eyes.
Please, Bail. Don't make me lie to him. It will break his heart.
Perhaps he saw something there. After a moment's indecision, he nodded.
Very well. Other matters can be left for other times. Until then, this meeting must remain absolutely secret. Even hinting at an effective opposition to Palpatine can be, as we've all seen, very dangerous.
We must agree never to speak of these matters except among the people who are now in this room. We must bring no one into this secret without the agreement of each and every one of us.
That includes even those closest to you, Mon Mothma added. Even your families. To share anything of this will expose them to the same danger we all face. No one can be told. No one.
Padme watched them all nod, and what could she do? What could she say?
You can keep your own secrets, but I'll have to tell my Jedi husband, who is Palpatine's beloved protege.
She sighed.
Yes. Yes. Agreed.
And all she could think as the little group dispersed to their own offices was,
Oh, Anakin. Anakin, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Anakin was glad the vast vaulted temple hallway was deserted save for him and Obi-Wan. He didn't have to keep his voice down.
This is outrageous! How can they do this?
How can they not? Obi-Wan countered. It's your friendship with the Chancellor, the same friendship that got you a seat at the Council, that makes it impossible to grant you mastery. In the Council's eyes, that would be the same as giving a vote to Palpatine himself. Anakin waved this off. He didn't have time for the Council's political maneuvering. Padme didn't have the time.
I didn't ask for this. I don't need this. So if I wasn't friends with Palpatine, I'd be a master already? Is that what you're saying?
Obi-Wan looked pained. I don't know.
I have the power of any 5 masters, any 10. You know it, and so do they.
Power alone is no credit to you.
Anakin flung an arm back toward the Council Tower. They're the ones who call me the Chosen One. Chosen for what? To be a dupe in some slimy political game?
Obi-Wan winced as if he'd been stung.
Didn't I warn you, Anakin? I told you of the tension between the Council and the Chancellor. I was very clear. Why didn't you listen? You walked right into it.
Like that ray shield trap, Anakin snorted. Should I blame this on the dark side too?
However it happened, Obi-Wan said, you are in a very delicate situation.
What situation? Who cares about me? I'm no master. I'm just a kid, right? Is that what it's about? Is Master Windu turning everyone against me because, until I came along, he was the youngest Jedi ever named to the Council?
No one cares about that. Sure they don't. Let me tell you something a smart old man said to me not so long ago. Age is no measure of wisdom. If it were, Yoda would be 20 times as wise as you are.
This has nothing to do with Master Yoda.
That's right. It has to do with me. It has to do with them all being against me.
They always have been. Most of them didn't even want me to be a Jedi. And if they'd won out, where would they be right now? Who would have done the things I've done? Who would have saved Naboo? Who would have saved Kamino? Who would have killed Dooku and rescued the Chancellor? Who would have come for you and Alpha after Ventress?
Yes, Anakin, yes, of course. No one questions your accomplishments. It's your relationship to Palpatine that is the problem. And it is a very serious problem.
I'm too close to him?
Maybe I am. Maybe I should alienate a man who's been nothing but kind and generous to me ever since I first came to this planet. Maybe I should reject the only man who gives me the respect I deserve.
Anakin, stop. Listen to yourself. Your thoughts are of jealousy and pride. These are dark thoughts, Anakin. Dangerous thoughts in these dark times. You are focused on yourself when you need to focus on your service. Your outburst in the Council was an eloquent argument against granting you mastery. How can you be a Jedi Master when you have not mastered yourself?
Anakin passed his flesh hand over his eyes and drew a long, heavy breath. In a much lower, calmer, quieter tone, he said,
What do I have to do?
Obi-Wan frowned.
I'm sorry? They want something from me, don't they? That's what this is really about. That's what it's been about from the beginning. They won't give me my rank until I give them what they want.
The Council does not operate that way, Anakin, and you know it. Once you're a master, as you deserve, how will they make you do their bidding?
Yes, I know it.
Sure I do, Anakin said.
Suddenly, he was tired. So incredibly tired. It hurt to talk. It hurt even to stand here. He was sick of the whole business. Why couldn't it just be over?
Tell me what they want. Obi-Wan's eyes shifted, and the sick fatigue in Anakin's guts turned darker. How bad did it have to be to make Obi-Wan unable to look him in the eye?
Anakin, look. I'm on your side, Obi-Wan said softly. He looked tired, too. He looked as tired and sick as Anakin felt.
I never wanted to see you put in this situation.
What situation?
Still, Obi-Wan hesitated. Anakin said, Look, whatever it is, it's not getting any better while you're standing here working up the nerve to tell me. Come on, Obi-Wan. Let's have it.
Obi-Wan glanced around the empty hall as if he wanted to make sure they were still alone.
Anakin had a feeling it was just an excuse to avoid facing him when he spoke.
The Council, Obi-Wan said slowly, approved your appointment because Palpatine trusts you. They want you to report on all his dealings. They have to know what he's up to.
They want me to spy on the Supreme Chancellor of the Republic?
Anakin blinked numbly. No wonder Obi-Wan couldn't look him in the face.
Obi-Wan, that's treason!
We are at war, Anakin.
Obi-Wan looked thoroughly miserable. The Council is sworn to uphold the principles of the Republic through any means necessary.
We have to, especially when the greatest enemy of those principles seems to be the Chancellor himself.
Anakin's eyes narrowed and turned hard. Why didn't the Council give me this assignment while we were in session?
Because it's not for the record, Anakin. You must be able to understand why.
What I understand, Anakin said grimly, is that you are trying to turn me against Palpatine.
You're trying to make me keep secrets from him. You want to make me lie to him.
That's what this is really about.
It isn't, Obi-Wan insisted.
He looked wounded.
It's about keeping an eye on who he deals with and who deals with him.
He's not a bad man, Obi-Wan. He's a great man who's holding this Republic together with his bare hands.
By staying in office long after his term has expired. By gathering dictatorial powers.
The Senate demanded that he stay. They pushed those powers on him.
Don't be naive. The Senate is so intimidated, they give him anything he wants.
Then it's their fault, not his. They should have the guts to stand up to him.
That is what we're asking you to do, Anakin.
Anakin had no answer. Silence fell between them like a hammer. He shook his head and looked down at the fist he had made of his mechanical hand.
Finally, he said, He's my friend, Obi-Wan.
Yes, Obi-Wan said softly. Sadly, I know.
If he asked me to spy on you, do you think I would do it?
Now it was Obi-Wan's turn to fall silent.
You know how kind he has been to me.
Anakin's voice was hushed.
You know how he's looked after me, how he's done everything he could to help me.
He's like family.
The Jedi are your family.
No. Anakin turned on his former master. No, the Jedi are your family, the only one you've ever known.
But I'm not like you. I had a mother who loved me.
And a wife who loves me, he thought. And soon, a child who will love me too.
Do you remember my mother? Do you remember what happened to her?
Because you didn't let me go to save her? He finished silently.
And the same will happen to Padme, and the same will happen to our child.
Within him, the dragon's cold whisper chewed at his strength.
All things die, Anakin Skywalker. Even stars burn out.
Anakin, yes, of course. You know how sorry I am for your mother.
Listen, we're not asking you to act against Palpatine. We're only asking you to monitor his activities.
You must believe me. Obi-Wan stepped closer and put a hand on Anakin's arm. With a long, slowly indrawn breath, he seemed to reach some difficult decision. Palpatine himself may be in danger, he said. This may be the only way you can help him.
What are you talking about?
I am not supposed to be telling you this. Please do not reveal we have had this conversation to anyone. Do you understand?
Anakin said, I can keep a secret.
All right. Obi-Wan took another deep breath. Master Windu traced Darth Sidious to 500 Republica before Grievous's attack. We think that the Sith Lord is someone within Palpatine's closest circle of advisors. That is who we want you to spy on. Do you understand? A fiction created by the Jedi Council. An excuse to harass their political enemies. If Palpatine is under the influence of a Sith Lord, he may be in the gravest danger. The only way we can help him is to find Sidious and to stop him. What we are asking of you is not treason, Anakin. It may be the only way to save the Republic. If this Darth Sidious of yours were to walk through that door right now, I would ask him to sit down, and I would ask him if he has any power he could use to end this war.
So all you're really asking, Anakin said slowly, is for me to help the Council find Darth Sidious.
Yes. Obi-Wan looked relieved, incredibly relieved, as though some horrible chronic pain had suddenly and inexplicably eased.
Yes, that's it exactly.
Locked within the furnace of his heart, Anakin whispered an echo. Not quite an echo, slightly altered, just at the end. I would ask him to sit down, and I would ask him if he has any power he could use to save Padme.
The gunship streaked through the capital's sky. Obi-Wan stared past Yoda and Mace Windu, out through the gunship's window at the vast deployment platform and the swarm of clones who were loading the assault cruiser at the far end.
You weren't there, he said.
You didn't see his face. I think we have done a terrible thing.
We don't always have the right answer, Mace Windu said. Sometimes there isn't a right answer.
Know how important your friendship with young Anakin is to you, I do.
Yoda, too, stared out toward the stark angles of the assault cruiser being loaded for the counter-invasion of Kashyyyk. He stood leaning on his gimmer stick, as though he did not trust his legs.
Allow such attachments to pass out of one's life, a Jedi must.
Another man, even another Jedi, might have resented the rebuke, but Obi-Wan only sighed.
I suppose he is the chosen one after all. The prophecy says he was born to bring balance to the Force, but the words trailed off. He couldn't remember what he'd been about to say. All he could remember was the look on Anakin's face.
Yes, always in motion the future is.
Yoda lifted his head and his eyes narrowed to thoughtful slits.
And the prophecy, misread it could have been.
Mace looked even grimmer than usual. Since the fall of Darth Bane more than a millennium ago, there have been hundreds of thousands of Jedi. Hundreds of thousands of Jedi feeding the light with each work of their hands, with each breath, with every beat of their hearts, bringing justice, building civil society, radiating peace, acting out of selfless love for all living things. And in all those thousand years, there have been only two Sith at any time. Only two. Jedi create light, but the Sith do not create darkness. They merely use the darkness that is always there, that has always been there. Greed and jealousy, aggression and lust and fear. These are all natural to sentient beings. The legacy of the jungle, our inheritance from the dark.
I'm sorry, Master Windu, but I'm not sure I follow you. Are you saying, to follow your metaphor, that the Jedi have cast too much light? From what I have seen these past years,
The galaxy has not become all that bright a place.
All I am saying is that we don't know. We don't even truly understand what it means to bring balance to the Force. We have no way of anticipating what this may involve.
An infinite mystery is the Force,
Yoda said softly.
The more we learn, the more we discover how much we do not know.
So you both feel it too, Obi-Wan said. The words hurt him. You both can feel that we have turned some invisible corner.
In motion are the events of our time. Approach, the crisis does.
Yes.
Mace interlaced his fingers and squeezed until his knuckles popped.
But we're in a spice mine without a glow rod. If we stop walking, we'll never reach the light.
And what if the light just isn't there? Obi-Wan asked. What if we get to the end of this tunnel and find only night?
Faith must we have. Trust in the will of the Force. What other choice is there?
Obi-Wan accepted this with a nod, but still, when he thought of Anakin, dread began to curdle below his heart. I should have argued more strongly in council today.
You think Skywalker won't be able to handle this? Mace Windu said. I thought you had more confidence in his abilities.
I trust him with my life, Obi-Wan said simply. And that is precisely the problem. The other two Jedi Masters watched him silently while he tried to summon the proper words. For Anakin, Obi-Wan said at length, there is nothing more important than friendship. He is the most loyal man I have ever met, loyal beyond reason, in fact. Despite all I have tried to teach him about the sacrifices that are the heart of being a Jedi, he will never, I think, truly understand. He looked over at Yoda. Master Yoda, you and I have been close since I was a boy, an infant. Yet if ending this war 1 week sooner, 1 day sooner, were to require that I sacrifice your life, you know I would.
As you should,
Yoda said.
As I would yours, young Obi-Wan. As any Jedi would any other in the cause of peace.
Any Jedi, Obi-Wan said. Except Anakin. Yoda and Mace exchanged glances, both thoughtfully grim. Obi-Wan guessed they were remembering the times Anakin had violated orders. The times he had put at risk entire operations, the lives of thousands, the control of whole planetary systems, to save a friend. More than once, in fact, to save Obi-Wan. I think, Obi-Wan said carefully, that abstractions like peace don't mean much to him. He's loyal to people, not to principles, and he expects loyalty in return. He will stop at nothing to save me, for example, because he thinks I would do the same for him. Mace and Yoda gazed at him steadily, and Obi-Wan had to lower his head. Because, he admitted reluctantly, he knows I would do the same for him.
Understand exactly where your concern lies, I do not.
Yoda's green eyes had gone softly sympathetic.
Named must your fear be, before banish it you can. Do you fear that perform his task he cannot?
Oh no, that's not it at all. I am firmly convinced that Anakin can do anything. Except betray a friend. What we have done to him today.
But that is what Jedi are, Mace Windu said. That is what we have pledged ourselves to. Selfless service.
Obi-Wan turned to stare once more toward the assault ship that would carry Yoda and the clone battalions to Kashyyyk, but he could see only Anakin's face. If he asked me to spy on you, do you think I would do it? Yes, he said slowly. That's why I don't think he will ever trust us again. He found his eyes turning unaccountably hot, and his vision swam with unshed tears. And I'm not entirely sure he should.
Chapter 12. Not from a Jedi.
The sunset over Galactic City was stunning tonight.
Enough particulates from the fires remained in the capital's planet's atmosphere to splinter the light of its distant blue-white sun into a prismatic smear across multi-layered clouds. Anakin barely noticed. On the broad, curving veranda that doubled as the landing deck for Padme's apartment, he watched from the shadows as Padme stepped out of her speeder and graciously accepted Captain Typho's goodnight. As Typho flew the vehicle off toward the immense residential tower speeder park, she dismissed her two handmaidens and sent C-3PO on some busy work errand, then turned to lean on the veranda's balcony, right where Anakin had leaned last night. She gazed out on the sunset, but he gazed only at her. This was all he needed. To be here. To be with her. To watch the sunset bring a blush to her ivory skin. If not for his dreams, he'd withdraw from the order today. Now. The lost 20 would be the lost 21. Let the scandal come. It wouldn't destroy their lives. Not their real lives. It would destroy only the lives they'd had before each other. Those separate years that now meant nothing at all. He said softly, "Beautiful, isn't it?" She jumped, as if he'd pricked her with a needle.
"Anakin."
"I'm sorry." He smiled fondly as he moved out from the shadows. "I didn't mean to startle you." She held one hand pressed to her chest, as though to keep her heart from leaping out.
"No. No, it's all right. I just... Anakin, you shouldn't be out here. It's still daylight."
"I couldn't wait, Padme. I had to see you." He took her in his arms.
"Tonight is forever from now. How am I supposed to live that long without you?"
Her hand went from her chest to his. "But we're in full view of a million people, and you're a very famous man. Let's go inside." He drew her back from the edge of the veranda, but made no move to enter the apartment.
"How are you feeling?"
Her smile was radiant as Tatooine's primary as she took his flesh hand and pressed it to the soft fullness of her belly.
"He keeps kicking."
"He?" Anakin asked mildly. "I thought you'd ordered your medical droid not to spoil the surprise." "Oh, I didn't get this from the MD.
It's my..."
Her smile went softly sly.
"Motherly intuition."
He felt a sudden pulse against his palm and laughed.
"Motherly intuition, huh?
With a kick that hard? Definitely a girl." She laid her head against his chest.
"Anakin, let's go inside."
He nuzzled her gleaming coils of hair. "I can't stay. I'm on my way to meet with the Chancellor."
"Yes, I heard about your appointment to the Council. Anakin, I'm so proud of you."
He lifted his head, an instant scowl gathering on his forehead. Why did she have to bring that up? "There's nothing to be proud of," he said. "This is just political maneuvering between the Council and the Chancellor. I got caught in the middle, that's all."
"But to be on the Council at your age?"
"They put me on the Council because they had to. Because he told them to, once the Senate gave him control of the Jedi." His voice lowered toward a growl. "Because they think they can use me against him." Padme's eyes went oddly remote and thoughtful.
"Against him?" she echoed. "The Jedi don't trust him?"
"That doesn't mean much. They don't trust me either." Anakin's mouth compressed to a thin, bitter line. "They'll give me a chair in the Council chamber, but that's as far as it will go. They won't accept me as a master." Her gaze returned from that thoughtful distance, and she smiled up at him.
"Patience, my love. In time, they will recognize your ability."
"They already recognize my abilities. They fear my abilities," he said bitterly. "But this isn't even about that. Like I said, it's a political game."
"Anakin,
I don't know what's happening to the Order, but whatever it is, I don't like it." He shook his head. "This war is destroying everything the Republic is supposed to stand for. I mean, what are we fighting for anyway? What about all this is worth saving?" Padme nodded sadly, disengaging from Anakin's arms and drifting away.
"Sometimes I wonder if we're on the wrong side."
"The wrong side?
You think everything I've accomplished has been for nothing?"
He frowned at her. "You can't mean that." She turned from him, speaking to the vast airway beyond the veranda's edge.
What if the democracy we're fighting for no longer exists? What if the Republic itself has become the very evil we've been fighting to destroy?
Oh, this again. Anakin irritably waved off her words. I've been hearing that garbage ever since Geonosis. I never thought I'd hear it from you.
A few seconds ago, you were saying almost the same thing.
Where would the Republic be without Palpatine?
I don't know, she said, but I'm not sure it would be worse than where we are.
All the danger, all the suffering, all the killing, all my friends who gave their lives, all for nothing?
He bit down on his temper. Everybody complains about Palpatine having too much power, but nobody offers a better alternative.
Who should be running the war? The Senate? You're in the Senate. You know those people. How many of them do you trust?
All I know is that things are going wrong here. Our government is headed in exactly the wrong direction.
You know it too. You just said so.
I didn't mean that. I'm tired of this, that's all. This political garbage. Sometimes I'd rather just be back out on the front lines. At least out there, I know who the bad guys are.
I'm becoming afraid, she replied in a bitter undertone, that I might know who the bad guys are here, too.
His eyes narrowed. You're starting to sound like a separatist.
Anakin, the whole galaxy knows now that Count Dooku is dead. This is the time we should be pursuing a diplomatic resolution to the war.
But instead, the fighting is intensifying. Palpatine's your friend. He might listen to you. When you see him tonight, ask him, in the name of simple decency, to offer a ceasefire.
Anakin's face went hard. Is that an order? She blinked.
What?
Do I get any say in this? He stalked toward her. Does my opinion matter?
What if I don't agree with you? What if I think Palpatine's way is the right way?
Anakin, hundreds of thousands of beings are dying every day. It's a war, Padme. We didn't ask for it, remember?
You were there.
Maybe we should have pursued a diplomatic resolution in that beast arena.
I was...
She shrank away from what she saw on his face, blinking harder, brows drawn together.
I was only asking.
Everyone is only asking. Everyone wants something from me, and I'm the bad guy if they don't get it.
He spun away from her, cloak whirling, and found himself at the veranda's edge, leaning on the rail. The durasteel piping groaned in his mechanical grip.
I'm sick of this, he muttered. I'm sick of all of it.
He didn't hear her come to him. The rush of air cars through the lanes below the veranda drowned her footsteps. He didn't see the hurt on her face or the hint of tears in her eyes, but he could feel them in the tentative softness of her touch when she stroked his arm, and he could hear them in her hesitant voice.
Anakin, what is it? What is it really?
He shook his head. He couldn't look at her.
Nothing that's your fault, he said. Nothing you can help.
Don't shut me out, Anakin. Let me try.
You can't help me.
He stared down through dozens of crisscross lanes of traffic, down toward the invisible bedrock of the planet.
I'm trying to help you.
He'd seen something in her eyes when he'd mentioned the Council and Palpatine.
He'd seen it.
What aren't you telling me? Her hand went still, and she did not answer.
I can feel it, Padme. I sense you're keeping a secret.
Oh? She said softly, lightly.
That's funny. I was thinking the same about you.
He just kept staring down over the rail into the invisible distance below. She moved close to him, moved against him, her arm sliding around his shoulders, her cheek leaning lightly on his arm.
Why does it have to be like this? Why does there have to be even such a thing as war?
Can't we just go back? Even just to pretend?
Let's pretend we're back at the lake on Naboo, just the two of us, when there was no war, no politics, no plotting, just us, you and me, and love. That's all we need. You and me, and love.
Right now, Anakin couldn't remember what that had been like. "I have to go," he said. "The Chancellor is waiting."
Two masked-robed, silent red guards flanked the door to the Chancellor's private box at the Galaxy's Opera. Anakin didn't need to speak. As he approached, one of them said, "You are expected," and opened the door. The small round box had only a handful of seats, overlooking the spread of overdressed beings who filled every seat in the orchestra. On this opening night, it seemed everyone had forgotten there was a war on. Anakin barely gave a glance toward the immense sphere of shimmering water that rippled gently in the stage's artificial zero-G. He had no interest in ballet, Mon Calamari or otherwise. In the dim semi-gloom, Palpatine sat with the Speaker of the Senate, Mos Amida, and his administrative aide, Sly Moore. Anakin stopped at the back of the box.
"If I were the spy the Council wants me to be," Anakin thought, "I suppose I should be creeping up behind them so that I can listen in."
A spasm of distaste passed over his face. He took care to wipe it off before he spoke.
"Chancellor, sorry I'm late."
Palpatine turned toward him and his face lit up.
"Yes, Anakin, don't worry. Come in, my boy, come in. Thank you for your report on the council meeting this afternoon. It made most interesting reading. And now I have good news for you. Clone intelligence has located General Grievous."
"That's tremendous." Anakin shook his head, wondering if Obi-Wan would be embarrassed to have been scooped by the clones. "He won't escape us again."
"I'm going to Moore. Take a note. I will direct the council to give you this assignment, Anakin. Your gifts are wasted on Coruscant. You should be out in the field. You can attend council meetings by holoconference."
Anakin frowned. "Thank you, sir, but the Council coordinates Jedi assignments."
"Of course, of course. Mustn't step on any Jedi toes, must we? They are so jealous of the political prerogatives. Still, I shall wonder at their collective wisdom if they choose someone else."
"As I said in my report, they've already assigned Obi-Wan to find Grievous." "Because they want to keep me here," Anakin thought, "where I'm supposed to spy on you."
"To find him, yes, but you are the best man to apprehend him. Though, of course, the Jedi Council cannot always be trusted to do the right thing."
"They try. I believe they try, sir."
"Do you still? Sit down."
Palpatine looked at the other two beings in the box.
"Leave us."
They rose and withdrew. Anakin took Mos Amida's seat. Palpatine gazed distractedly down at the graceful undulations of the Mon Calamari principal soloist for a long moment. Frowning, as though there was so much he wanted to say, he was unsure where to begin. Finally, he sighed heavily and leaned close to Anakin.
"Anakin, I think you know by now that I cannot rely upon the Jedi Council. That is why I put you on it. If they have not yet tried to use you in their plot, they soon will."
Anakin kept his face carefully blank. "I'm not sure I understand."
"You must sense what I have come to suspect," Palpatine said grimly. "The Jedi Council is after more than independence from Senate oversight. I believe they intend to control the Republic itself."
"Chancellor."
"I believe they are planning treason. They hope to overthrow my government and replace me with someone weak enough that Jedi mind tricks can control his every word."
"I can't believe the Council."
"Anakin, search your feelings. You do know, don't you?"
Anakin looked away. "I know they don't trust you.
Or the Senate, or the Republic, or democracy itself for that matter. The Jedi Council is not elected. It selects its own members according to its own rules. A less generous man than I might say, whim, and gives them authority backed by power. They rule the Jedi as they hope to rule the Republic, by fiat."
"I admit," Anakin looked down at his hands, "my faith in them has been shaken."
"How? Have they approached you already?
Have they ordered you to do something dishonest? Palpatine's frown cleared into a gently wise smile that was oddly reminiscent of Yoda's. They want you to spy on me, don't they? It's all right, Anakin. I have nothing to hide. I don't know what to say. Do you remember? Palpatine said, drawing away from Anakin so that he could lean back comfortably in his seat. How, as a young boy, when you first came to this planet, I tried to teach you the ins and outs of politics? Anakin smiled faintly. I remember that I didn't much care for the lessons. For any lessons, as I recall. But it's a pity. You should have paid more attention. To understand politics is to understand the fundamental nature of thinking beings. Right now, you should remember one of my first teachings. All those who gain power are afraid to lose it. The Jedi use their power for good, Anakin said, a little too firmly. Good is a point of view, Anakin, and the Jedi concept of good is not the only valid one. Take your Dark Lords of the Sith, for example. From my reading, I have gathered that the Sith believed in justice and security every bit as much as the Jedi.
Jedi believe in justice and peace.
In these troubled times, is there a difference? Palpatine asked mildly. The Jedi have not done a stellar job of bringing peace to the galaxy, you must agree. Who's to say the Sith might not have done better?
This is another of those arguments you probably shouldn't bring up in front of the Council, if you know what I mean.
Anakin replied with a disbelieving smile. Oh, yes. Because the Sith would be a threat to the Jedi Order's power. Lesson one.
Anakin shook his head. Because the Sith are evil.
From a Jedi's point of view, Palpatine allowed, evil is a label we all put on those who threaten us, isn't it? Yet the Sith and the Jedi are similar in almost every way, including their quest for greater power.
The Jedi's quest is for greater understanding, Anakin countered, for greater knowledge of the Force,
which brings with it greater power, does it not?
Well, yes. Anakin had to laugh. I should know better than to argue with a politician.
We're not arguing, Anakin. We're just talking.
Palpatine shifted his weight, settling in comfortably.
Perhaps the real difference between the Jedi and the Sith lies only in their orientation. A Jedi gains power through understanding, and a Sith gains understanding through power. This is the true reason the Sith have always been more powerful than the Jedi. The Jedi fear the dark side so much, they cut themselves off from the most important aspect of life. Passion. Of any kind. They don't even allow themselves to love.
Except for me, Anakin thought. But then, I've never been exactly the perfect Jedi.
The Sith do not fear the dark side. The Sith have no fear. They embrace the whole spectrum of experience, from the heights of transcendent joy to the depths of hatred and despair. Beings have these emotions for a reason, Anakin. That is why the Sith are more powerful. They are not afraid to feel.
The Sith rely on passion for strength, Anakin said. But when that passion runs dry, what's left?
Perhaps nothing. Perhaps a great deal. Perhaps it never runs dry at all. Who can say?
They think inward, only about themselves, Anakin said.
And the Jedi don't? The Chancellor asked.
The Jedi are selfless. We erase the self to join with the flow of the Force. We care only about others.
Palpatine again gave him that smile of gentle wisdom. Or so you've been trained to believe. I hear the voice of Obi-Wan Kenobi in your answers, Anakin. What do you really think?
Anakin suddenly found the ballet a great deal more interesting than Palpatine's face. I don't know anymore.
It is said that if one could ever entirely comprehend a single grain of sand, really, truly understand everything about it, one would, at the same time, entirely comprehend the universe.
Who's to say that a Sith, by looking inward, sees less than a Jedi does by looking out?
The Jedi are good. That's the difference. I don't care who sees what.
What the Jedi are, Palpatine said gently, is a group of very powerful beings you consider to be your comrades. And you are loyal to your friends. I have known that for as long as I have known you, and I admire you for it. But are your friends loyal to you?
Anakin shot him a sudden frown. What do you mean?
Would a true friend ask you to do something that's wrong?
I'm not sure it's wrong, Anakin said. Obi-Wan might have been telling the truth. It was possible. They might only want to catch Sidious. They might really be trying to protect Palpatine.
They might. Maybe. Have they asked you to break the Jedi Code? To violate the Constitution? To betray a friendship? To betray your own values?
Chancellor.
Think, Anakin. I have always tried to teach you to think. Yes, yes, Jedi do not think. They know, but those stale answers aren't good enough now in these changing times. Consider their motives. Keep your mind clear of assumptions. The fear of losing power is a weakness of both the Jedi and the Sith.
Anakin sank lower in his seat. Too much had happened in too short a time. Everything jumbled together in his head, and none of it seemed to make complete sense.
Except for what Palpatine said. That made too much sense.
This puts me in mind of an old legend, Palpatine murmured idly.
Anakin, are you familiar with the tragedy of Darth Plagueis the Wise?
Anakin shook his head.
Ah, I thought not. It is not a story the Jedi would tell you. It's a Sith legend. Of a dark lord who had turned his sight inward so deeply that he had come to comprehend and master life itself. And, because the two are one when seen clearly enough, death itself.
Anakin sat up. Was he actually hearing this? He could keep someone safe from death?
According to the legend, Palpatine said, he could directly influence the midichlorians to create life. With such knowledge, to maintain life in someone already living would seem a small matter, don't you agree?
A universe of possibility blossomed inside Anakin's head. He murmured, stronger than death.
The dark side seems to be, from my reading, the pathway to many abilities some would consider unnatural.
Anakin couldn't seem to get his breath. What happened to him?
Oh, well, it is a tragedy after all, you know. Once he has gained this ultimate power, he has nothing to fear save losing it. That's why the Jedi Council brought him to mind, you know.
But what happened?
Well, to safeguard his power's existence, he teaches the path toward it to his apprentice.
And?
And his apprentice kills him in his sleep.
Palpatine said with a careless shrug.
Plagueis never sees it coming. That's the tragic irony, you see. He can save anyone in the galaxy from death, except himself.
What about the apprentice? What happens to him?
Oh, him. He goes on to become the greatest Dark Lord the Sith have ever known.
So, Anakin murmured, it's only a tragedy for Plagueis.
For the apprentice, the legend has a happy ending.
Oh, well, yes.
Quite right. I'd never really thought of it that way.
Rather like what we were talking about earlier, isn't it? What if, Anakin said slowly, almost not daring to speak the words, it's not just a legend?
I'm sorry?
What if Darth Plagueis really lived? What if someone really had this power?
Oh, I am rather certain that Plagueis did indeed exist. And if someone actually had this power, well, he would indeed be one of the most powerful men in the galaxy. Not to mention,
virtually immortal. How would I find him? I'm sure I couldn't say. You could ask your friends in the Jedi Council, I suppose. But of course, if they ever found him, they'd kill him on the spot. Not as punishment for any crime, you understand. Innocence is irrelevant to the Jedi. They would kill him simply for being Sith. And his knowledge would die with him.
I have to...
Anakin found himself half out of his seat, fists clenched and trembling. He forced himself to relax and sit back down, and he took a deep breath.
You seem to know so much about this. I need you to tell me. Would it be possible, possible at all, to learn this power?
Palpatine shrugged, regarding him with that smile of gentle wisdom. Well, clearly, he said. Not from a Jedi. For a long, long time after leaving the opera house, Anakin sat motionless in his idling speeder, eyes closed, resting his head against the edge of his mechanical hand. The speeder bobbed gently in the air wakes of the passing traffic. He didn't feel it. Klaxons blared, rising and fading as angry pilots swerved around him. He didn't hear them. Finally, he sighed and lifted his head. He stroked a private code into the speeder's comm screen. After a moment, the screen lit up with an image of Padme's half-asleep face.
Anakin?
She rubbed her eyes, blinking.
Where are you? What time is it?
Padme, I can't. He stopped himself, huffing a sigh out through his nose. Listen, Padme, something's come up. I have to spend the night at the temple.
Oh. Well, all right, Anakin. I'll miss you.
I'll miss you, too. He swallowed. I miss you already.
We'll be together tomorrow?
Yes. And soon, for the rest of our lives. We'll never have to be apart again. She nodded sleepily.
Rest well, my love.
I'll do my best. You too. She blew him a kiss, and the screen went blank. Anakin fired thrusters and slid the speeder expertly into traffic, angling toward the Jedi Temple, because that part, the part about spending the night at the temple, was the part that wasn't a lie. The lie was that he was going to rest, that he was going to even try. How could he rest when every time he closed his eyes, he could see her screaming on the birthing table? Now the Council's insult burned hotter than ever. He even had a name, a story, a place to start. But how could he explain to the Archives Master why he needed to research a Sith legend of immortality? Yet maybe he didn't need the Archives after all. The Temple was still the greatest nexus of Force energy on the planet, perhaps even the galaxy. And it was unquestionably the best place in the galaxy for intense, focused meditation. He had much he needed the Force to teach him, and a very short time to learn. He would start by thinking inward, thinking about himself. Chapter 13, The Will of the Force. When her handmaiden Mote awakened her with the word that C-3PO had announced a Jedi was waiting to see her, Padme flew out of bed, threw on a robe, and hurried out to her living room, a smile breaking through her sleepiness like the dawn outside. But it was Obi-Wan. The Jedi Master had his back to her, hands clasped behind him, as he drifted restlessly about the room, gazing with abstracted lack of interest at her collection of rare sculpture.
Obi-Wan, she said breathlessly,
she bit off the following, something happened to Anakin? How would she explain why this was the first thing out of her mouth?
Has C-3PO offered you anything to drink?
He turned to her, a frown clearing from his brow.
Senator, he said warmly,
so good to see you again. I apologize for the early hour. And yes, your protocol droid has been quite insistent on offering me refreshment. His frown began to regather. But as you may guess, this is not a social call. I've come to speak with you about Anakin. Her years in politics had trained her well, even as her heart lurched
and a shrill, "How much does he know?" echoed inside her head. Her face remained only attentively blank. A primary rule of Republic politics: tell as much truth as you can, especially to a Jedi.
I was very happy to learn of his appointment to the Council.
Yes, it is perhaps less than he deserves, though I'm afraid it may be more than he can handle. Has he been to see you?
Several times, she said evenly. Something is wrong, isn't it?
Obi-Wan tilted his head, and a hint of rueful smile showed through his beard. You should have been a Jedi. She managed a light laugh.
And you should never go into politics. You're not very good at hiding your feelings.
What is it?
It's Anakin.
With his pretense of cheer fading away, he seemed to age before her eyes. He looked very tired and profoundly troubled.
May I sit? Please.
She waved him to the couch and lowered herself onto its edge beside him.
Is he in trouble again?
I certainly hope not. This is more a personal matter. He shifted his weight uncomfortably.
He's been put in a difficult position as the Chancellor's representative, but I think there's more to it than that. We had words yesterday, and we parted badly.
Her heart shrank.
He must know, and he'd come to confront her,
to bring their whole lives crashing down around their ears.
She ached for Anakin,
but her face showed only polite curiosity.
What were these words about?
She asked delicately.
I'm afraid I can't tell you,
he said with a vaguely apologetic frown. Jedi business. You understand. She inclined her head.
Of course. It's only that, well, I've been a bit worried about him. I was hoping he may have talked to you.
Why would he talk to me about... She favored him with her best friendly but skeptical smile.
Jedi business.
Senator Padme, please. He gazed into her eyes with nothing on his face but compassion and fatigued anxiety.
I am not blind, Padme, though I have tried to be for Anakin's sake and for yours.
What do you mean?
Neither of you is very good at hiding feelings either.
Obi-Wan, Anakin has loved you since the day you met in that horrible junk shop on Tatooine. He's never even tried to hide it, though we do not speak of it. We pretend that I don't know. And I was happy to, because it made him happy. You made him happy, when nothing else ever truly could. He sighed, his brows drawing together.
And you, Padme, skilled as you are on the Senate floor, cannot hide the light that comes to your eyes when anyone so much as mentions his name.
She lurched to her feet.
I can't... Obi-Wan, don't make me talk about this. I don't mean to hurt you, Padme, nor even to make you uncomfortable. I'm not here to interrogate you. I have no interest in the details of your relationship.
She turned away, walking just to be moving, barely conscious of passing through the door out into the dawn-painted veranda.
Then why are you here?
He followed her respectfully.
Anakin is under a great deal of pressure. He carries tremendous responsibilities for a man so young. When I was his age, I still had some years to go as a Padawan.
He is changing quickly, and I have some anxiety about what he is changing into. It would be a very great mistake were he to leave the Jedi Order.
She blinked as though he'd slapped her.
Why, that seems unlikely, doesn't it? What about this prophecy the Jedi put so much faith in? Isn't he the chosen one?
Very probably. But I have scanned this prophecy. It says only that a chosen one will be born and bring balance to the Force. Nowhere does it say he has to be a Jedi.
She blinked harder, fighting down a surge of desperate hope that left her breathless.
He doesn't have to?
My master, Qui-Gon Jinn, believed that it was the will of the Force that Anakin should be trained as a Jedi. And we all have a certain, oh, I suppose you could call it, a Jedi-centric bias. It is a Jedi prophecy, after all.
But the will of the Force,
Isn't that what Jedi follow?
Well, yes, but you must understand that not even the Jedi know all there is to be known about the Force. No mortal mind can. We speak of the will of the Force as someone ignorant of gravity might say it is the will of a river to flow to the ocean. It is a metaphor that describes our ignorance. The simple truth, if any truth is ever simple, is that we do not truly know what the will of the Force may be. We can never know. It is so far beyond our limited understanding that we can only surrender to its mystery.
What does this have to do with Anakin? She swallowed, but her voice stayed tight and thin. And with me. I fear that some of his current difficulty has to do with your relationship. If you only knew how much, she thought. What do you want me to do? He looked down. I cannot tell you what to do, Padme. I can only ask you to consider Anakin's best interests. You know the two of you can never be together while he remains in the Order. A bleak chill settled into her chest. Obi-Wan, I can't talk about this. Very well. But remember that the Jedi are his family. The Order gives his life structure. It gives him a direction. You know how undisciplined he can be. And that's why he is the only Jedi I could ever love, she thought. Then she said, Yes. Yes, of course. If his true path leads him away from the Jedi, so be it. But please, for both of your sakes, tread carefully. Be sure. Some decisions can never be reversed.
Yes, she said slowly, feelingly. I know that too well.
He nodded as though he understood, though of course he did not understand at all. We all do these days. A soft chiming came from within his robe. Excuse me, he said and turned aside, producing a comlink from an inner pocket. Yes? A man's voice came thinly through the comlink, deep and clipped.
We are calling the Council into special session. We've located General Grievous.
Thank you, Master Windu, Obi-Wan said. I'm on my way.
General Grievous?
Her eyes went hot and stung with sudden tears. And so they would take her Anakin away from her again. She felt a stirring below her ribs. Away from us, she amended. And there was so much love and fear and joy and loss, all swirling and clashing within her, that she dared not speak. She only stared blindly out across the smog-shrouded cityscape as Obi-Wan came close to her shoulder.
Padme, he said softly, gently, almost regretfully, I will not tell the Council of this, any of it. I'm very sorry to burden you with this, and I hope I haven't upset you too much. We have all been friends for so long, and I hope we always will be. Thank you, Obi-Wan, she said faintly.
She couldn't look at him. From the corner of her eye, she saw him incline his head respectfully and turn to go. For a moment, she said nothing, but as his footsteps receded, she said,
Obi-Wan?
She heard him stop.
You love him too, don't you?
When he didn't answer, she turned to look. He stood motionless, frowning, in the middle of the expanse of buff carpeting.
You do. You love him.
He lowered his head. He looked very alone.
Please do what you can to help him, he said, and left.
The hollow scan of Utapau rotated silently in the center of the Jedi Council chamber. Anakin had brought the holo projector from the Chancellor's office. Obi-Wan wondered idly if the projector had been scanned for recording devices planted by the Chancellor to spy on their meeting, then dismissed the thought. In a sense, Anakin was the Chancellor's recording device. And that's our fault, he thought. The only Council members physically present, other than Obi-Wan and Anakin, were Mace Windu and Agent Kolar.
the council reached a quorum by the projected holopresences of Ki-Adi Mundi en route to Maegito, Plo Koon and Kato Nymoidia, and Yoda, who was about to make planetfall on Kashyyyk.
"Why Utapau?" Mace Windu was saying. "A neutral system of little strategic significance and virtually no planetary defense force."
"Perhaps that is itself the reason," Agent Kolar offered.
"Easily taken.
And their sinkhole-based culture can hide a tremendous number of droids from long-range scans."
Ki-Adi Mundi's frown wrinkled the whole length of his forehead.
"Our agents on Utapau have made no report of this."
"They may be detained, or dead," Obi-Wan said. Mace Windu leaned toward Anakin, scowling.
"How could the Chancellor have come by this information when we know nothing about it?"
Clone intelligence intercepted a partial message in a diplomatic packet from the chairman of Utapau, Anakin told him. "We've only managed to verify its authenticity within the past hour." Obi-Wan felt a frown crawl onto his forehead at the way Anakin now referred to the Chancellor's office as "we."
"Clone intelligence," May said heavily, "reports to us."
"I beg your pardon, Master Windu, but that is no longer the case." Though Anakin's expression was perfectly solemn, Obi-Wan thought he could detect a hint of satisfaction in his young friend's voice. "I thought it had been already made clear. The constitutional amendment, bringing the Jedi under the Chancellor's office, naturally includes troops commanded by Jedi. Palpatine is now Supreme Commander of the Grand Army of the Republic."
"Pointless it is to squabble over jurisdiction,"
the image of Yoda said.
"Act on this we must."
"I believe we all agree on that," Anakin said briskly. "Let's move to the operational planning. The Chancellor has requested that I lead this mission, and so I..."
"The Council will decide this," May said sternly. "Not the Chancellor."
"Dangerous Grievous is. To face him, steady minds are needed. Masters we should send."
Perhaps of all the Council, only Obi-Wan could detect the shadow of disappointment and hurt that crept into Anakin's eyes. Obi-Wan understood perfectly and could even sympathize. To take the field would have slipped Anakin out from under the pressures of what he saw as his conflicting duties.
"Given the strain on our current resources," Mace Windu said, "I recommend we send only one Jedi, Master Kenobi,"
which would leave Mace and Agent Kolar, both among the greatest blades beings the Jedi Order had ever produced, here on Coruscant, in case Sidious did indeed take this opportunity to make a dramatic move. Not to mention Anakin, who was a brigade's worth of firepower in his own right. Obi-Wan nodded. Perfectly logical. Everyone would agree. Except Anakin. He leaned forward, red climbing his cheeks. He wasn't so successful the last time he met Grievous.
"Anakin," Obi-Wan began. "No offense, my master. I am only stating a fact."
"Oh no, not at all. You're quite right. But I have a feel for how he fights now, and for how he runs away. I am certain I can catch him."
"Master, and you, my young friend, have duties here on Coruscant. Extremely important duties that require your full attention," Obi-Wan reminded him. "Am I being clear?"
Anakin didn't answer. He sank back into his chair and turned away.
"Obi-Wan, my choice is,"
Yoda said. Ki-Adi Mundi's image nodded.
"I concur. Let's put it to a vote."
Mace Windu counted nods.
6 in favor.
He waited, looking at Anakin.
"Further comment?"
Anakin only stared at the wall. After a moment, Mace shrugged.
"It is unanimous."
Senator Chi Ikwe accepted a tube of aqualish hoi broth from C-3PO's refreshment tray.
"I am very grateful to be included here," she said, her dewlaps jiggling as she tilted her blue head in a gesture around Padme's living room at the gathering of senators.
"I speak directly only from my own sector, of course, but I can tell you that many senators are becoming very nervous indeed."
You may not know that the new governors are arriving with full regiments of clone troops, what they call security forces. We all have begun to wonder if these regiments are intended to protect us from the separatists, or to protect the governors from us.
Padme looked up from the document reader in her hand. I have reliable information that General Grievous has been located, and that the Jedi are already moving against his position. The war may be over in a matter of days.
But what then? Bail Organa leaned forward, elbows to knees, fingers laced together.
How do we make Palpatine withdraw his governors? How do we stop him from garrisoning troops in all our systems?
We don't have to make him do anything, Padme said reasonably. The Senate granted him executive powers only for the duration of the emergency.
Yet it is only Palpatine himself who has the authority to declare when the emergency is over, Bail countered. How do we make him surrender power back to the Senate?
Chi Ikwe shifted backward. There are many who are willing to do just that, she said. Not just my own people. Many senators. We are ready to make him surrender power.
Padme snapped the document reader closed. She looked from senator to senator expressionlessly. Would anyone care for further refreshment?
Senator Amidala, Ikwe said. I fear you don't understand.
Senator Ikwe, another hoi broth?
No, that's...
Very well, then. She looked up at C-3PO. 3PO, that will be all. Please tell Mote and L.A. that they are dismissed for the day. Then you are free to power down for a while.
Thank you, Mistress,
3PO replied.
Though I must say, this discussion has been most stimulating.
3PO, Padme's tone went a trace extra firm. That will be all.
Yes, Mistress. Of course. I quite understand.
The droid turned stiffly and shuffled out of the room. As soon as 3PO was safely out of earshot, Padme brandished the document reader as though it were a weapon.
This is a very dangerous step. We cannot let this turn into another war.
That's the last thing any of us wants,
Bail said with a disapproving look at Senator Ikwe.
Alderaan has no armed forces. We don't even have a planetary defense system. A political solution is our only option.
Which is the purpose of this petition, Mon Mothma said, laying her soft hand over Padme's. We're hoping that a show of solidarity within the Senate might stop Palpatine from further subverting the Constitution. That's all. With the signatures of a full 2,000 senators... We still have less than we need to stop his supermajority from amending the Constitution any way he happens to want, Padme finished for her. She weighed the reader in her hand. I am willing to present this to Palpatine, but I am losing faith in the Senate's readiness or even ability to rein him in. I think we should consult the Jedi.
Because I really think they can help, or because I just can't stand a lie to my husband, she thought. She couldn't say. She hoped that both were true, though she was sure only of the second.
Bana Brimu examined her long, elegantly manicured fingertips.
That, she said remotely, would be dangerous.
Mon Mothma nodded.
We don't know where the Jedi stand in all this. Padme sat forward. The Jedi aren't any happier with the situation than we are. Senator Brimu's high-arched cheekbones made the look she gave Padme appear even more distant and skeptical.
You seem remarkably well-informed about Jedi business, Senator Amidala.
Padme felt herself flush, and she didn't trust herself to answer.
Gideon Danu shook his head, doubt plainly written across his dark face.
If we are to openly oppose the Chancellor, we need the support of the Jedi. We need their moral authority. Otherwise, what do we have?
The moral authority of the Jedi, such as it is, Bana Brimu said, has been spent lavishly upon war. I fear they have none left for politics.
One Jedi, then, Padme offered to the others.
At least let me speak the truth to my love. At least, please, she pleaded with them silently.
She then said,
There is one Jedi, one whom I truly know all of us can trust absolutely. Her voice trailed off into appalled silence when she realized that she wasn't talking about Anakin. This had been all about him when she'd started. All about her love, her need to be open with him, the pain that keeping the secret stabbed her heart at each and every beat. But when the thought had turned to trust, when it became a question of someone she knew, truly and absolutely knew she could trust, she discovered that she was talking about Obi-Wan. Anakin, something was breaking inside her. Oh, my love, what are they doing to us? Chi-Ikwe shook her head.
Patient, Senator.
Fang Zar unknotted his fingers from his raggedly bushy beard and shrugged.
Yes, we cannot block the Chancellor's supermajority, but we can show him that opposition to his methods is growing. Perhaps that alone might persuade him to moderate his tactics.
Bana Brimu went back to examining her fingertips. When you present the petition of the 2000, many things may change.
But, Gideon Danu said, will they change for the better?
Bail Organa and Mon Mothma exchanged glances that whispered of some shared secret. Bail said slowly,
let us see what we can accomplish in the Senate before we involve the Jedi.
And as one after another of the senators agreed, Padme could only sit in silence, in mourning, grieving for the sudden death of an illusion.
Anakin, Anakin, I love you. If only...
But that, if only, would take her to a place she could not bear to go. In the end, she could only return to the thought she feared would echo within her for the rest of her life.
Anakin, I'm sorry.
The last of the hover tanks whirred up the ramp into the sky-shrouding wedge of the assault cruiser. It was followed by rank upon immaculately regimented rank of clone troopers, marshaled by battalions, marching in perfect synchrony. Standing alongside Obi-Wan on the landing deck, Anakin watched them go. He couldn't quite make himself believe he wasn't going along. It wasn't that he really wanted to go with Obi-Wan to Utapau, even though it'd be a relief to pull out of the political quagmire that was sucking him down. But how could he leave Padme now? He didn't even care anymore about being the Jedi to capture Grievous, though such a feat would almost certainly bring him his mastery. He was no longer certain he needed to be a master at all. Through the long, black hours of meditation last night, meditation that was often indistinguishable from brooding, he had begun to sense a deeper truth within the Force, a submerged reality, lurking like a sarlacc beneath the sunlit sands of Jedi training. Somewhere down there was all the power he would ever need. So no, it wasn't that he wanted to go. It was more, inexplicably, that he wanted Obi-Wan to stay. There was a cold void in his chest that he was afraid would soon fill with regret and grief. Of course, there was no chance at all that Obi-Wan wouldn't go. He'd be the last Jedi in the galaxy to defy an order of the Council. Not for the first time, Anakin found himself wishing that Obi-Wan could be a little more like the late Qui-Gon. Though he'd known Qui-Gon for mere days, Anakin could almost see him right now, brow furrowing as he gently inclined his head over his shorter Padawan. He could almost hear his gentle baritone instructing Obi-Wan to be mindful of the currents of the living Force. To do one's duty is not always to do right. Concern yourself with right action. Let duty take care of itself. But he couldn't say that. Though he'd passed his trials many months ago, to Obi-Wan, he was still the learner, not the master. All he could say was, I have a bad feeling about this. Obi-Wan was frowning as he watched a clone deck crew load his blue and white starfighter onto the assault cruiser's flight deck.
I'm sorry, Anakin. Did you say something?
You're going to need me on this one, Master. And he could feel an unexpected truth there, too. If he were to go along, if he could somehow bring himself to forget about Padme for a few days, if he could somehow get himself away from Palpatine and the Council and his meditations and politics and everything here on Coruscant that was dragging him this way and that way and sucking him under, if he could just tag along and play the Kenobian Skywalker game for a few days, everything might still be all right. If only.
It may be nothing but a wild bantha chase, Obi-Wan said. Your job here is much more important, Anakin.
I know. The Sith. The word left a bitter taste in Anakin's mouth. The Council's manipulation had a rank stench of politics on it. Anakin shrugged helplessly, looking away. I don't like you going off without me like this. It's a bad idea to split up the team. I mean, look what happened last time.
Don't remind me. You want to go spend another few months with somebody like Ventress, or worse?
Anakin. Anakin could hear a gentle smile in Obi-Wan's voice.
Don't worry. I have enough clones to take 3 systems the size of Utapau's. I believe I should be able to handle the situation, even without your help.
Anakin had to answer his smile.
Well, there's always a first time.
Obi-Wan said, We're not really splitting up, Anakin. We've worked on our own many times. Like when you took Padme to Naboo while I went to Kamino and Geonosis. And look how that turned out.
All right. Bad example, Obi-Wan admitted, his smile shading toward rueful.
Yet, years later, here we all are, still alive and still friends.
My point, Anakin, is that even when we work separately, we work together. We had the same goals. End the war and save the Republic from the Sith. As long as we're on the same side, everything will come out well in the end. I'm certain of it.
Well, Anakin sighed, I suppose you could be right. You are, once in a while. Occasionally.
Obi-Wan chuckled and clapped him on the shoulder.
Farewell, old friend.
Master, wait. Anakin turned to face him fully. He couldn't just stand here and let him walk away. Not now. He had to say something. He had a sinking feeling he might not get another chance.
Master, he said hesitantly, I know I've disappointed you in these past few days. I have been arrogant. I have not been very appreciative of your training, and what's worse, of your friendship. I offer no excuse, Master. My frustration with the Council, I know that none of it is your fault, and I apologize.